Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cyber Monday. My name is Christian Redshaw, and joining me, as always, is my charismatic co-host, Mr. Dominic Vogel.
Well, I appreciate the charismatic reference there. Today we have Calvin Krusty from Interventus Global, and you and I have chatted with Calvin before, and my God, the stories he has. I'm just so excited to be able to share his stories with our viewers. It's off the charts. I'm really looking forward to it.
Let's stop talking. Let's bring Calvin in, and we'll be right back. Calvin, it's really great to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much for inviting me. Looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, so I've heard bits and pieces about your career. You've been in law enforcement, all kinds of international crazy stories that you have, really entertaining stuff, and the private sector. So tell us about your career. Take us through that journey.
So I spent 34 years or 33 years and 70 days to be precise the RCMP. The last 10 years, probably more relative to this particular area, heavily focused in transnational organized crime threats. Some of it with linkages and concerns relative to state actors, transnational organized crime groups, Chinese organized crime networks, Iranian Chinese networks, cartels, etc. And paralleling that was, I was involved probably for about the last 20 years in what referred to as crimes and actions, and those including kidnapping, extortions, product contamination, and blackmail, and very similar to some of the dynamics relative to cyber extortion, ransomware, et cetera, et cetera. So I was also the team leader for Canada until my retirement 2 years ago for doing terrorist negotiations for ransoms, and then retired 2 years ago and joined a collective group of former colleagues of mine, guys that I had a ton of respect for, that came from a similar background, primarily connected to those involved in negotiations, ransom negotiations, and that from around the world, and currently working with that group with Interventus Global. And we're just at this particular time looking at the inclusion more of not only the negotiations and the crisis management side in terms of services and products, but bring in a piece of the intelligence side so that we would have enhanced capabilities within our group looking at, hey, who are the actors, who are we engaged in negotiation with and interacting with? So we're building that part into it within Interventus Global.
So we could end this interview right here. You are already among, if not the most interesting guests right there. You just laid down all these casual topics like
it's nothing.
Negotiation and all these huge things. Yeah. So we could stop it right there.
Yeah. I picture you like Bruce Willis in his prime when you're telling me these stories here. But one of the things the three of us have had so many interesting conversations, and for the benefit of our viewers, I think one area I'd like to there's a couple areas I could dive into. First one is though on that whole notion of ransomware. I mean, we were discussing this last time we talked. A lot of IT or technical people will say, the whole notion of should you ever pay a ransom? They're like, well, it depends. If you don't have the backup, you have no choice but to pay the ransom. And they're giving but one side of the story. And you brought up a really interesting point when we were chatting about I can't remember if it was money laundering or funding terrorists, but being able to say, there are ramifications that a lot of people don't know about if you pay the ransomware. I was wondering if you could enlighten our viewers about some of those ramifications that are never brought to surface.
Yeah, I think there's I've been involved in the whole negotiating ransoms for probably 25 years, from war zones to boardrooms to working with families and that. And it's a highly complex activity with both, I guess, as we apply it now with cyber, reputational risk, obviously, but a huge impact on employees, communities, national security, etc. And, you know, similar to that parallel, you know, in terms of negotiating ransoms on the kidnappings and that, some similar risks there too, you know, through the experience that I wonder and I question just from following kind of social media, is everybody looking at some of those additional risks on that? Because I think there seems to be an abundance of people saying that they're involved and can do that ransom negotiations, but are they looking at it through the lens that, say, other industries that have been involved in doing ransom negotiations have, and looking at those risks? I don't see any of that identified in social media right now. And so one of those, as you've alluded to, was, you know, some of the legislation relative to terrorist financing, proceeds of crime, and all the liability that comes when you do that. And I see it quite often in industry, in other sectors with money laundering and that, where people are looking, well, I am following kind of the, and complying with the parameters and the legal parameters within a Canadian context. And I've looked at the law and I'm kind of, this doesn't really matter, right? Because these organizations and some of the actors in some of these cyber crimes and incidents, you know, could be from a whole wide range of other countries. Some of them could have sanctions against them. Some of them could be affiliated with terrorist organizations and that. And even though right now, I would say that there's challenges and the risk is low to medium, I would say, that the authorities have identified historically where the money's going to. And I would say as society and as a security intelligence institutions get more focused at cyber crime and this current threat, I think their capacity is going to increase in terms of visibility, in terms of who's behind these. And then you're going to start seeing, I would anticipate, some consequences for some non-compliance in terms of sanctions, proceeds of crime in terms of facilitating that. And that's aside from the fact of just fueling the business, you know, which is, you know, something that is actually discussed in social media. But not to be confused, because even when I was doing terrorist negotiations, you know, you never negotiate with a terrorist. I disagree with that because I spent the majority of my career, a lot of time negotiating with terrorists, having conversations with them and that. So, you know, if you were to ask me, hey, pay or don't pay, case specific, right? There's no simple answer.
There's very shades of gray there. It's not white, black and white.
How would you define negotiation? Because when our listeners are who are primarily business people or, let's say, nonprofits, they would think of it in terms of negotiating a business deal or a contract or what have you. Would you say it maybe is more stalling to handle the situation?
Well, in
a tense, you know, hostage or ransom type.
And, you know, it's interesting that you ask that question because, again, social media, I mean, there's a lot of marketing in the area of, hey, we do ransom negotiations. And I would just say if somebody was on my team and every time they had a demand, they conceded and said, here's your, you know, $500,000 or here's your $1 million for the ransom, I don't really know if that's negotiating or if that's conceding. So that's number one. And I'm not sure how you get that experience because I know I've been doing it for 25 years and it's a learning process. And it requires a lot of diversity in terms of strategies, tactics, and that used in it. So to your point, I would say that bargaining piece in terms of, you know, conceding or not conceding and how much to conceding in terms of like drilling down finding that business transaction in terms of the, you know, X amount of dollars, you know, for the data back, that that's part of it. Number two is the negotiations which I think probably understated within cybersecurity. And that's the negotiations, you know, and it was probably the most difficult negotiations that we had when we were dealing with it, was negotiating with the commanders, or in this particular case, with the C-suite, because that requires an immense amount of effort, tactics, strategies, and experience to do, just because of personalities are involved quite often. Emotions are involved in these crisis situations.
So the C-suite is more difficult to deal with at times than the terrorists themselves?
I would say from policing, all joking aside, that my job as a team leader was often negotiating with the commanders. And I found it much easier sometimes negotiating with the criminals than sometimes the commanders. And it's just... Not in a derogatory way, but there's just a lack of understanding sometimes of that human element in terms of the whole dimensions. And, you know, some people are excellent in some areas professionally, control, command, decision-making, et cetera. And then when it comes down to going, hey, we're in the middle of a crisis situation and we're dealing with criminals, and it's going to require some patience, some innovative critical thinking, some things that are counterintuitive in terms of communication strategies and tactics. It's not the normal stuff that takes place in a boardroom, right? The actors, you know, are not your normal kind of business guys. They don't play by the you know, the ethics and the rule books.
And they don't take evenings and weekends off
either. Yeah, exactly. And then the third part, which you touched on, which I think is probably one of the biggest contributors and assets that we brought to the table in other forms of ransom negotiations, was the acquisition of time. And time to allow for the analytics in terms of the forensics in the cyber, time to allow for the internal external communication to mitigate reputational risk is something that I think is super important that people like myself can bring to the table through this other experience. And and then just the acquisition of time to allow for proper decision making to do, and which I would include going back to the other point, if you are paying a ransom, to ensure that your decision making documentation on it is done. Because even though if you're paying a ransom today, I think you run a risk in a year from now, or 6 months from now, or in 3 years from now, that somebody's going to scrutinize you paid and why did you pay. And I don't get the sense, like from my other life, we had to be looking at those liability concerns. And I think I've alluded to here, and I obviously can't get into it in detail, but you know, sadly, I get asked sometimes because of my ransom negotiation background to come in on the civil litigation side and look at companies that have paid ransoms in this area, and did they actually do a proper negotiation process, or did they, quote unquote, just concede and pay and have told the clients and told everybody they've actually gone through a negotiation process, or did they just go, here's your $500,000, here it is, and there could have been other ways to mitigate the, you know, the threat and the damage and the reputational damage and the consequences to employees and the consequences to their clients.
And this sort of parlays into my next question. I know this is a piece that we had chatted about as well last time, was a lot of organizations, when they think of, you know, in the aftermath of a data breach or ransomware or some other cybersecurity incident, to them, the response is very technically oriented. It's like, do we have the forensics? Do we have, you know, the technical people ready? But like you had mentioned when we last spoke, was, you know, that is but what a small percentage. There's a bigger piece of that pie, that operational piece, almost sort of making sure that there's an incident team leader, incident commander, who can walk through this. Like, because this is walking through sort of like a fire drill of sorts, and in real life, and often that lacks from so many incident response plans that, that we see with organizations. Technically, they may have that piece down, but they're missing that larger 80%. So how important is that for organizations to keep that in mind?
Well, I would say like probably around 2002, I had this aha moment relative to something taking place in the kidnapping world. And yeah. I use that parallel example all the time. Is that the response to those were highly driven by technical, you know, surveillance, physical surveillance, yeah. Wiretap, you know, doing the, you know, equivalent of the cyber analytics in terms of the forensics and that, you know, listening and trying to find out who's behind it, mm-hmm. and how much damage is done, you know, doing that to collect information and that. Yeah. But roughly at that time, I got exposed to something called crimes in action, which, you know, cyber extortions would yep. fall into that category. And it was a model that is employed by very few people right now, but I think, you know, my anticipated level of confidence is going to get more and more applied. And I alluded to in previous conversations, Deloitte did a great article on it a number of years ago, comparing kidnapping response to cyber response. Mm. And it really came from this, I think, was they infused that response capability because it is a crisis situation with a major consideration is being looking at the human element, managing the human element. Mm-hmm. And not only, you know, as I alluded to, managing the human element with the bad actor or yep. perpetrator,
yeah.
But within your team as well, mm-hmm. Because, you know, with the tech people, with the C-suite people, managing the emotions,
managing
the interactivity with that through, you know, creating proper structures, yep. Making sure the right skills mm-hmm. and talents are there, not based on positions, but based on experience and other attributes that they have to bring to the table in terms of responding to that.
Yep.
So it's just infusing more and more of the response with the human element considerations and that. And they, I think there's lots of lessons that we've learned in other type of ransom response situations that are applicable to these.
Yeah, we have just a few minutes left here, and there's a couple things that I want to get to. And the first one is, can you take a minute or two and take us through an actual real life scenario of a ransom situation? What was the emotions like? How were people responding? Like, what does it look like?
Well,
is it like anything in the movies?
Is it like Liam Neeson and give me back my son?
I will find you.
It is, you know, and the emotional part, because there's so much at risk, you know, whether it be a life or whether it be, you know, the reputation and well-being of your corporation, the employees, your clients. I mean, there's a lot at stake, obviously, in both cases. And, you know, I don't want to compare one to the other. Yeah. Both are super serious. And once you get, you know, that level of stress, a lot of things start changing in terms of human dynamics, yeah. right? In terms of personalities, decision making, critical thinking, all that stuff takes place. And our experience that we've had through real life experience coupled with even simulation training. And I mentioned to you in previous that I had the fortunate opportunity to go through cyber simulation exercises over in Europe last summer with Room 42, which was super impressive. But you can just see even through simulation how, you know, people's anxiety, stress, decision-making behavior completely changes, right? And unless one has significant training experience or whatever, I think it's really hard if you're only hit with one of those incidents, like once every 5 years or once every 10 years, right? Yeah. I'm somewhat, as you've alluded to, probably maybe a little desensitized.
Because I'm relaxed about it.
Doing it for 25 years in and out of war zones and now in boardrooms as well.
Yeah. It's interesting because that's the piece that our audience is most interested in, is how does this impact businesses? Because I think, you know, you alluded to it earlier, there's these nation states. So I guess a two-part question is, how are they organized? Who's behind it? at the big level, and then how is it impacting companies and organizations?
Well, when I do presentations in terms of like what the actors look like, you know, I go from the guy in the basement with the hoodie on that's on every internet site in terms of cybersecurity to having these massive auditoriums with military people in uniforms with screens looking at it. And then in the middle, you have your transnational organized crime networks and that. So, I mean, the hoodies... easy to explain. The transnational groups, they're like Fortune 500 companies. Their capabilities are just amazing. I've done work with the Guzman, you know, Chapel Guzman network. And it, you know, as soon as we started working with them, we realized, okay, they've got boardrooms, obviously. They don't make billions of dollars just by hanging out in street corners, reaching in their pocket, handing dope out on the street. They're very, very sophisticated. They've got transportation networks, et cetera. And I would say that, you know, those organizations are the same organizations that are either similarly structured for security purposes and for, you know, to be able to manage the finances that they're accumulating during their criminal activities. So I would describe them as big business. Mm-hmm. And then you got your state actors, which, you know, are government-facilitated security and intelligence agencies. And I've alluded to this in some of our conversations where, you know, that whole concept of hybrid war or asymmetrical warfare, where it's really a conflict situation where states are not using traditional military weapons and are looking at cyber as part of it, with that coupled with, say, special operations, coupled with, you know, leveraging transnational organized crime in terms of frauds and a whole, you know, money laundering to threat finance in terms of taking over countries through taking over their political and financial institutions. So you're looking at extremely sophisticated with massive resources, far more resources than the person, say, in a C-suite downtown Vancouver or Toronto has in Canada. So I think it's super, super challenging, you know, for a tech person, IT person, to be able to kind of go, how am I going to respond to those particular type of threats?
Yeah, and I think the even scarier thing is those small and medium-sized organizations that are up against this reality of particularly, let's say, the transnational organized crime groups, and they're going, well, we're just a small organization. They're not really targeting us. There's a bit of a gap to fill there, I would say.
Well, yeah, and you know, a guy like Chapo Guzman made a decision years ago, probably about, I don't know, 10 years ago. I don't remember the date he made it, but I remember his shipments used to be 500, 1,000 kilos, you know, 2,000, 3,000 kilos at a time. But he was smart enough, right, strategically, at his boardroom table to go, hey, I'm no longer doing that. I'm attracting too much attention by going on the big shipments and going for the big score. So what he did is he broke down and says, hey, I'm just doing 40 keys of coke at a time or 80 keys of coke at a time. I'll go under the radar, but I'll go like an army of ants and attack, you know, at the smaller level to make the bigger gains and go under the radar. Yeah. So I think your point, you know, to small businesses and medium businesses, don't anticipate the states are just going to, you know, these state actors are going to go after the big business, because Chapo Guzman, as a criminal, made that decision because less detection, less heat, easier, less risk on his corporate entity himself.
Absolutely.
So,
Calvin, I know, honestly, Christian, I could chat with you for hours, and I think there's only so much battery on the video recorder. So we're definitely going to have you back on, because our conversations with you are always so fascinating. And Christian and I are very grateful to you for taking time out of your busy day to chat with us.
Yeah, thanks very much for the inclusion. And I just say to yourselves and your listeners, like, one of the real reasons that Interventus Global and ourselves are in it is really to kind of share our lessons from the school of hard knocks over here and try to help society, because it is really a significant concern for the society that I define as a national security issue, not just a business risk as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's awesome. Christian and I will be right back to wrap things up.
awesome conversation with Calvin. What did you think?
Well, he's like a real life action hero. You know, I keep picturing him at Nakatomi Plaza, like Bruce Willis, just breaking in there and busting ass and kicking the East German terrorists. Yeah, yeah. Right. Like, again, so much of what he knows he can't even share. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like tangible takeaways, I thought what was really interesting was him being able to drive everything home that, you know, often how we talk with our clients that, you know, this, your business isn't happening in a vacuum. There's a lot of stuff happening in the world that so many of us just aren't aware of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And he's really does a great job of sort of connecting the dots about, you know, there's bigger things at play here that we all need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree with you. And that piece for me about the transnational criminal networks,
yes,
and how well-resourced and intentional and deliberate and well-organized they are versus the organizations and businesses that don't think that they're a target.
Yeah.
A big gap and a big discrepancy there that something needs to be done. Awareness needs to be made. And so we're doing it one episode at a time.
Next time he has a hostage negotiation or something, I want to be there just to see him. And then, you know, it was just so interesting just listening to him. I think he was fantastic.
I'm good with that as long as it's a phone negotiation, a remote negotiation. Yeah, yeah. I'm okay with that.
I'll be away from any collateral damage.
Yeah. That's right. So thanks for watching. You can check out our other podcasts on conversationsthatmatter.tv, also Conversations That Matter YouTube channel and the Cyber Monday playlist. And we will see you next Monday.